91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we welcome back founder Lee Schrager. He'll share his excitement about the 14th annual South Beach Wine and Food Festival. Judith Bishop speaks with founder and artistic director Stephanie Anson about the Miami Theater Center's latest presentation, The 7-Year Itch. Film critic Dan Hudak delivers his sage Oscar predictions. Chef Norman Van Aken cooks up a word on food. And our Miami-Dade Arts Calendar features Deborah Margol. Please stay with us to catch the arts conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News.
Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to Gravy Davey. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Welcome back to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. On today's program, we'll feature artistic director Stephanie Anson in conversation with our contributor, Judith Bishop, about the Miami Theater Center. Film critic Dan Hudak delivers his Oscar predictions. Chef Norman Van Aken cooks up a word on food. And our Miami-Dade Arts Calendar features Deborah Margol. Benefiting the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management's Wine Spectator Restaurant Management Laboratory and Southern Wine and Spirits Beverage Management Center at Florida International University, the 14th Annual Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Food and Wine, is set to kick off on Thursday, February 19th with over 75 events during a four-day star-studded world-renowned gourmet gathering. To help us make some sense of this immense fundraiser, we recently spoke with the festival's founder and director, who is also the vice president of corporate communications and national events at Southern Wine and Spirits of America, Incorporated. And Mr. Lee Brian Schrager, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
My favorite time of year to speak with you, Ed.
This is a gargantuan effort that has raised how many millions for FIU's School of Hospitality and Restaurant Management Laboratory?
Well, it's raised over $20 million for the Chaplin School of Hospitality Management. And as you said, it's gargantuan. And as Hillary Clinton has said, it takes a village. And it takes a village of great partners, great sponsors, great talent, great community, great city to produce a festival like ours.
Yes, as we mentioned, the festival benefits the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management's Wine Spectator Restaurant Management Laboratory and Southern Wine and Spirits Beverage Management Center at FIU. That's the North Campus. Tell me a little bit about the campus. This is an amazing, amazing facility.
Well, it is an amazing facility, and it's even more amazing now with this beautiful new Wine Spectator Teaching Laboratory and, of course, the Southern Wine and Spirits Beverage Management Laboratory. And it's a state-of-the-art hospitality school, and we are incredibly proud of the money that we've raised from the festival that helped build this restaurant teaching laboratory, and it's really just something that everyone should see. And although we are not doing any events at the school this year because we're just too inundated with all the events on the beach, next year we'll start doing programming at the school itself, so all of you can get an opportunity to come and visit the beautiful school.
Lee, tell me about the school's graduates. How far-flung are they throughout the world, and how are they spreading the message that you all have instituted into these wonderful students?
Well, I have to tell you, you know, I like to travel, and it's seldom that I go someplace where I don't run into someone who says that they graduated from the school, or they worked in the festival, or how great an opportunity it was, and how wonderful the experience was at the Southern Wine Spirits Beverage Laboratory. I bet you can find a graduate from the School of Hospitality Management in probably almost every country in this world. I think that's how far the reach is. They put out thousands of graduates every year receiving bachelor's and master's at the school. And as you know, this is an industry where you get to move around and travel. And, you know, the experience that you get from that school allows you to work in every single aspect of the industry.
Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, Lee, you've had thousands of students pass through the FIU School of Hospitality and Tourism Management, and thousands of the students continue to work each year on the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. About the same number this year helping you all out?
Oh, God, we have well over 1,000 students who help the weekend of the festival. And, you know, leading up to the festival, we have students and interns working in our festival offices there at Southern Wine and Spirits. And as we get closer, it, you know, grows and grows to the point where we'll have about 1,300 students from the school working at the festival the weekend of.
Well, it's wonderful because you all have continued to make each year significant changes to upgrade the experience. And let's start talking about the upgrades and the wonderful offerings this year. Over 75 different events,
Is that the number? I mean, it seems like a lot of events to me, but you know what? I have to say, if that's what it is, I try not to think of it as that many events. I just like to focus on each of them individually.
So tell me how you've upgraded the Grand Signature, the Tasting Village, MasterCard Grand Tasting Tents, and KitchenAid Culinary Demonstrations.
Well, I think, you know, the Grand Tasting is really our signature event. It put us on the map. It's that one ticket that gets you into almost a full day from, you know, noon to 6 p.m. right on the beach. The beautiful Atlantic Ocean is our backdrop. And we have, as you said, culinary demonstrations from the biggest name in the food world, from pop culture to Michelin chefs. We have hundreds of wineries and distilleries sampling wines and spirits. We have over 120 South Florida restaurants participating in the restaurant. All of our great sponsor installations are there, plus the wonderful Food Network book signings and the Books and Books retail operations and flavor galleries retail operation. I will tell you, we call it our village, and that's what it really is. It's a, you know, we think the world's greatest wine and food village, featuring literally tens of thousands of people over that weekend.
Now, so many people, but I understand that you've added more seating and shaded areas. You'll have live music and DJs, and as well, a select park and ride offering from downtown Miami, where you can park in downtown Miami, as I understand it, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, and they will whisk you away to the Grand Tasting Village. So you don't have to worry about going to South Beach with your car and finding a parking space.
You know, it's one of the you know, big takeaways that we've heard each year, that parking is such an issue in the beach. And whether it's Boat Show, whether it's Art Basel, or whether it's Art Deco weekend, you know, the beach is it's a condensed packed area, and we are doing everything we can to listen to our consumer and to see how we can upgrade the experience. And one of those things that we've heard throughout the years is parking and the cost of parking, and more than that, just the time to find the right parking. And this year I said we're finally going to do something about it, and we have this free parking ride that will be from locations downtown and drop you off right at the heart of the festival.
Thanks so much for making those necessary upgrades. I understand the festival kicks off Thursday, February 19th with the Ronzoni Pasta's 100th anniversary Seaside Spaghetti Soiree.
Well, that is the first time we've ever, you know, we've been so successful with, you know, burger and taco and fried chicken and barbecue. And I have to say that I think Italian food is probably one of our most favorite foods here in America. I bet you there are probably as many Italian restaurants as any ethnic restaurants, although it's hard to even think of Italian as ethnic anymore. And we have gathered up 30 of the greatest Italian chefs throughout the country.
Wow.
And we are doing this wonderful al fresco, you know, romantic kind of sexy party on the beach, hosted by our all-time favorite Debbie Nazar and her husband Gabriel Corco. So on Thursday the 19th, we'll kick off the festival.
You all are experts at producing those wonderful, warm events. Now, tell me about Meatopia. And that's the Q Revolution presented by Creekstone Farms and hosted by the wild man, the rock and roll Guy Fieri.
Well, Meatopia is a brand that I've loved. It's, you know, produced, it was started by Joshua Azersky, who's the editor of Esquire magazine and, you know, one of the great food aficionados in the country. And he had been doing this event in New York City called Meatopia that I really loved, and I always wanted to do that event down here. And I finally said, you know, the barbecue event, which started as the Q, the bubble Q, then became the Q, is one of our most successful events, and how do we keep it fresh and how do we tweak it? And by partnering with Josh Azersky, and we've kind of grown our Q or bubble Q into this Meatopia, which is really not dissimilar from what it's always been. Great emphasis on barbecue. But this year, a lot of it will be focused on all meat that's hormone-free. And a lot of the meat that's being grilled are going to be whole animals. So it's really, really, really a great experience. And I'd say that the selection of chefs at the Meatopia this year is probably the greatest gathering of any of our events of the culinary world.
I tell you, the 14th Annual Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Food and Wine, is just, it's mind-boggling. Poolside paella party, tacos after dark, empanada and wine happy hour, rooftop ice cream and chocolate party, a sprinkles cupcakes, on and on. Tribute to the resurgence of, I love this, tiki culture mixology. More information, voluminous information, is available at sobefest.com, or you can call 877-762-3933. Lee, are there any more tickets left?
Listen, we have lots of events and we have lots of tickets still available. I have to say that the beauty of being on the beach is we have the opportunity to expand and accommodate more people as the demand is there. And I would think that there's tickets left for anyone still looking. You know, there's an event out there for you.
Well, we're speaking with Mr. Lee Brian Schrager, the founder and director of the 14th Annual Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Food and Wine, February 19th through the 22nd. Once again, more info at sobefest.com or call 877-762-3933. Lee is also a writer. He published in late May last year, Fried and True, published by Clarkson and Potter. And coming up in perhaps the spring of 2016, Breakfast in America. Sounds deliciously.
Well, it's important that you start your day with a great breakfast, and that's been proven. And we've had a great time compiling some of the greatest breakfast recipes across the country.
Festival director and founder Lee Brian Schrager, thank you so much for joining us again on South Florida Arts Beat, and thank you for your years of wonderful fundraising for FIU's School of Hospitality and Tourism Management, and thank you for creating one of the greatest festivals in this country.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for all your support all these years.
Please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. South Florida Arts Beat returns in just a moment.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, film critic Dan Hudak presents his sage predictions for the upcoming Oscars. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Miami-Dade arts calendar features Deborah Margol. Presenting thought-provoking contemporary theater and newly imagined classics, the Miami Theater Center in Miami Shores celebrates an anniversary this year. Here's Judith Bishop to tell us more.
The Miami Theater Center is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and for most of its run, it was known as the Playground Theater, presenting original and imaginative productions geared to children. But in recent years, the creative team just made a sharp U-turn and now offers unconventional drama and comedy appealing to a sophisticated adult audience. The company was founded by artistic director Stephanie Anson. She's a Miami native who studied, acted, and directed in both New York and Boston before returning home to her Miami roots. She's our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Stephanie, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. You have a very exciting new production opening soon, but first I had a question I wanted to ask. Why did you decide, you and your creative team, to make that sharp U-turn and transition from children's to adults theater?
What we did was we opened the umbrella. So we're still doing theater for young audiences, but we're also doing theater for mature audiences because we realized that we wanted to widen the range of artists we are working with, as well as audiences we were attracting. Also, our audiences were growing up. You know, we've been around 10 years now, so there are kids who grew up coming to shows with their schools and then said, hey, it's my 18th birthday. I want to go to this edgy show in the Sandbox for my birthday. So we're still a destination for kids who grew up coming to our shows.
It's wise, I think, to diversify like that and to broaden the base. February 19th is going to be a big night at MTC. You will be previewing your edgy adaptation of the comedy The Seven-Year Itch, which is a 1950s play by George Axelrod that became a classic film starring none other than Marilyn Monroe. What factors led you to select this particular play, and why do you think it still resonates these decades later with audiences?
I'll answer in opposite order.
Okay.
I had this conversation with a good friend of mine when I was thinking about doing The Seven-Year Itch, and I wanted to know from her perspective, just raw person on the street, why is this story still relevant without any intellectual or artistic theories? And her answer was, because Miami is the adultery capital of the world.
Probably not something the tourist board is going to put on a bumper sticker. And you know what? Midlife crises never go out of style.
They don't. And loneliness doesn't go away, and restlessness and just the feeling that one needs to be loved and give love, that doesn't go away. It's universal. It's an old story that's just told in different ways at different times. My relationship with the play actually started in 2001, when I was in grad school. I directed this for my thesis for my MFA at Columbia University. So I've been sitting with this play for a long time. And the reason I wanted to do it again in our 10th anniversary season was I had become friends with Aaron Glickman, who's the publisher of Social Miami. And in his past life, he was an actor. And for about 4 years, he's been telling me he wants to get back on stage. He wants to do a show. And I knew that this was a really good role for him. And I'd been wanting to do the play again in a professional situation. So I said, you want a challenge? You want to get back on stage? Let's do this. And he said, okay. And it's huge. Yesterday, I told him this is like Mick Jagger doing a comeback world tour after 10 years on Ibiza.
It is a challenge. It really is. For those people who are not familiar with The Seven-Year Itch, can you give us a brief outline of the plot and the main character?
Sure. The main character is a publisher named Richard Sherman, and he lives in New York City. It's the early 1950s. And like many executives of the time, his wife has gone away for the summer with their child, and he's home working in the hot city alone in their apartment. So he's restless. He's supposed to be on a regime of not drinking, not smoking, behaving. But at the same time, it's his first time alone. So he's kind of enjoying the freedom. And before he can figure out what to do with himself, he meets a young woman who's subletting the apartment upstairs. And they start hanging out together. And the whole play takes place over 36 hours. And what's very different between the play and the movie is in the play, they do sleep together. In the movie, that was censored.
Too risque for the 1950s.
Yes. And George Axelrod, who wrote the play, said that he felt like that censorship ruined the movie because the source of the comedy is Richard's guilt. He feels guilty for what he's done, and that's funny. But in the movie, he never actually did it. So the guilt isn't as grounded.
It sounds like fun. Home alone for philandering husbands. Right.
Right.
Now, who gets the plum female role? I don't know who played it on Broadway. Can you tell us? And, of course, Marilyn did it.
Marilyn did in the movie, so she made it super famous. And at MTC, it's an actress we've worked with for 4 years named Diana Garley, who's 22, just like the character in the movie.
The film version had one of the iconic scenes of all time, I think, when the breeze from the subway grate blows up Marilyn's white dress well above her knees. It was scandalous at the time. Are you going to make reference to that? Do you have a wind machine waiting in the wings?
Well, our choreographer desperately wanted a wind machine. Unfortunately, we couldn't accommodate that because we couldn't open the floor and we couldn't hide it. But we are definitely aware of the audience's expectations of seeing Marilyn Monroe, seeing that dress, seeing that subway. And we are meeting that expectation in an unexpected way. Marilyn is present in the play. Diana Garley's character is not alluding to Marilyn. She's not trying to be Marilyn, but Marilyn is present. There is an homage to Marilyn in the production, and there is a thread of action that to me reflects how much Marilyn has infected our psyche and our imagination, and also how tragic it is that, as her famous song is, I want to be loved by you, just you, and nobody else but you. She really wanted to be loved too, and she was loved by millions and didn't feel it and ended her life tragically.
It sounds like a very smart directorial choice not to impersonate Marilyn Monroe. That's Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And in addition, you've made another very interesting choice, a little unconventional, but you have added music. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a lot of opportunity for music in the script, and some places it's specified what tunes to play because it's a, you know, there's social interactions between this man and this woman, and they're playing music. But to go along with the homage to Marilyn, we have different music than is specifically cited in the text. And we also have original music composed by Luciano Stazzone that accompanies a lot of the fantasy scenes because a big part of this play takes place inside Richard's head. So he's talking to his wife in his head about all the opportunities he's passed up with all the women in his life. He's talking to a voice in his head about what he should do with this girl. Should he go for it or not go for it? Is she going to sue him for blackmail? Is he going to have to get divorced? Is this going to ruin his life? Is she going to want to get married? All of these monologues happen inside his own head, and we see the character circulating inside his mind.
Interesting take. Now, in conjunction with this play, you've scheduled an event at Books and Books, and you've assembled a very interesting panel to talk about all these issues.
Yes, so far we've assembled Dr. Stan DeHart, who's a theater professor. He was actually the teacher who discovered Aaron Glickman as an actor years ago in college. And he has a great personality, very opinionated, but also open to other opinions. We had him on a panel in the past, and a psychiatrist on the panel did not agree with him and actually got him over to her side. So he comes off really strong, but he's open to listening. Also on the panel is a psychologist, Dr. Elsa Orlandini. She specializes in relationships, and also she's a sex therapist. So she can talk to us about the seven-year itch in life today and how does it affect relationships and about fidelity and monogamy and what does that mean today. And then the moderator is Betsy Wise, who has history in law. She was a lawyer. Then she was a stand-up comedian, and now she's a branding and marketing consultant. So she has humor, she has intelligence, she's great at leading an audience and asking questions, and she also has experience in the main character's field.
Now, what's the date of this event at Books and Books? And it is the Coral Gables location,
it's
correct?
It's the Coral Gables location. The panel's on Wednesday, February 25th at 8 p.m., and yes, at the Coral Gables Books and Books.
Last year, you did Hedda Gabler. This year, it's Seven-Year Itch. And thematically, they're very similar. It's entrapment in a marriage, a way of life, a job. Are you two-thirds of the way to a trilogy? And if so, what are you going to do for an encore?
That's so interesting because we use the same set for both shows. We've just painted it differently and dressed it differently. Hedda was all white and didn't have any walls. It's just the metal frame and some curtains. And in Itch, we filled in the walls, partly because there are a lot of secret entrances and exits, and also because we wanted to create the feeling of the apartment in New York, and it's all different colors. So I don't want to get rid of that set, and we have been thinking about ways to reconfigure the pieces of the set, and I can't say, I don't want to say what we're thinking of, and I hadn't thought of it as a trilogy, but now I realize it is. There is something we're thinking of that could be considered the third part of the trilogy, so thank you.
Well, that's something for our listeners to look forward to. Stephanie Anson, thank you for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Judith.
The Seven-Year Itch opens February 19th and runs through March 22nd, with performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock and Sunday afternoons at 2. And on April 19th, MTC will host its 10th anniversary gala, featuring Tony Award winner Tanya Pinkins. The Miami Theater Center is located at 9603 Northeast 2nd Avenue in Miami Shores. For more information, log on to mtcmiami.org or telephone 305-751-9550. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment.
Hollywood Hotel. Good evening. The moment I'll connect you.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken presents A Word on Food, and our Miami-Dade Arts Calendar features Deborah Margol. The 87th Academy Awards will take place the last Sunday in February. Have you selected your winners of last year's films? Well, our film critic Dan Hudak of PunchDrunkMovies.com has, and here they are.
The Oscars are Sunday, February 22nd at 8 p.m. Neil Patrick Harris is the host, and based on his work hosting the Tony Awards, he should be a good one. Harris will perform an original song and dance number called Moving Pictures that was written by Frozen Oscar winners Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, and there will be plenty more singing with John Legend and Common performing their Oscar-nominated song Glory from Selma. And oh yeah, there will be winners and losers. Here's a breakdown of the big six categories on Oscar night, including predictions that I'll brag about if I'm right, and will never mention again if I'm wrong. On Oscar night, as we've learned many times, anything can happen. The Best Picture race is shaping up much like that of the 2010 campaign, in which The Social Network won most of the early critics' honors, while The King's Speech ran roughshod over the Guild Awards and Oscars. This year, Boyhood took many of the early accolades, while Birdman has been coming on strong of late with wins at the Producers Guild and Screen Actors Guild Awards. And given that a handful of Guild members are also Oscar voters, you have to lean toward Birdman having the edge for Best Picture. But this is a tight race that can go any number of ways, especially given the strength and quality of the other nominees. The Grand Budapest Hotel is an absolute delight and probably director Wes Anderson's best film. Selma is a triumph of acting and sentiment with a strong message. The Imitation Game has two acting nominations and is very well made, and the same can be said for The Theory of Everything. Whiplash was my pick for the best film of 2014, a high-energy crash course in pedagogy and the peril of blind ambition. And American Sniper is a runaway box office hit that has won the heart of Americans everywhere. Which leads me to my prediction, and it comes down to this. As we've learned in the past with Shakespeare in Love beating Saving Private Ryan, and even last year with 12 Years a Slave beating Gravity, Academy members vote with their hearts above anything else. And I think Boyhood will win their hearts, so Boyhood will win even though Whiplash should win. Often Best Picture and Best Director go hand in hand, so one would expect Boyhood director Richard Linklater to take home the Oscar. But not so fast. Based on its Guild Award victories, one has to expect Birdman to win a major award, and its best shot is for director Alejandro González Iñárritu. The gimmick of the film appearing to have been shot in one long take is technically masterful. You can expect the film to win Best Cinematography as well. And the story is an apt commentary on industry issues, including the cult of celebrity, disdain for critics, the hardships of artistry, and more. Also nominated for Best Director are Bennett Miller for Foxcatcher, Morton Tildum for The Imitation Game, and Wes Anderson for The Grand Budapest Hotel. When it's all said and done, though, Iñárritu will win even though Tildum should win, as I believe The Imitation Game is the best film amongst the five directing nominees. Unlike Picture and Director, the acting awards are a bit easier to predict, especially in the supporting categories. For supporting actor, J.K. Simmons is rightfully a lock for his turn as the sadistic music teacher who tortures an aspiring drummer played by Miles Teller in Whiplash. Simmons' fiery demeanor, ice-cold stare, deep voice, and black attire immediately make his character, Fletcher, a fearsome individual. Listen to how Fletcher tries to get Teller's Andrew Neiman to figure out if he's rushing or dragging to the beat, all after he just threw a chair at Andrew's head.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In four, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
I don't know.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference.
With Simmons clearly the person who will win and should win, fellow supporting actor nominees Edward Norton for Birdman, Mark Ruffalo for Foxcatcher, Ethan Hawke for Boyhood, and Robert Duvall for The Judge are truly honored just to be nominated. Supporting actress also has a clear favorite, and that is Patricia Arquette for Boyhood. Her performance as a single mom who makes poor relationship decisions is one of the emotional highlights of the film, and she's a respected actress who's paid her dues. Arquette is up against Emma Stone in Birdman, Keira Knightley in The Imitation Game, Laura Dern in Wild, and Meryl Streep's 19th acting nomination for Into the Woods. It's a solid category, but Arquette will win and should win. For Best Actress, it looks like it's finally Julianne Moore's year. Her phenomenal performance as a linguistics professor with early-onset Alzheimer's in Still Alice is the 5th nomination of her career and should be her first victory. Moore's transition from a smart alpha woman into someone who can barely remember her children is heartbreaking, and the highlight of female performances in 2014. In this scene, she describes to her daughter, played by Kristen Stewart, how having Alzheimer's makes her feel.
What's it like? Like, what does it actually feel like?
Well, it's not always the same. You know, I have good days, bad days, and on my good days, I can, you know, almost pass for a normal person. But on my bad days, I feel like I can't find myself. I've always been so defined by my intellect, my language, my articulation, and now sometimes I can see the words hanging in front of me and I can't reach them and I don't know who I am and I don't know what I'm going to lose next.
Also nominated for Best Actress are previous winners Reese Witherspoon for Wild and Marion Cotillard for 2 Days, 1 Night, as well as Felicity Jones for The Theory of Everything and Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl. Pike was my personal favorite, but in all honesty, Moore will win and should win. And finally, Best Actor will come down to Eddie Redmayne as ALS-afflicted Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything, and Michael Keaton as an actor looking to prove himself in Birdman. Both were fantastic, so it begs the question. Will the Academy go for the more physical performance with Screen Actors Guild winner Redmayne, or the career-best great comeback story of Keaton? This is a tough one to call, and it's not made any easier with the strong work of fellow Best Actor nominees Bradley Cooper in American Sniper, Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, and Steve Carell as we've never seen him before in Foxcatcher. This will be very close, but Redmayne will win and should win. One final note. Remember to have fun with the Oscars and not take them too seriously. Of course you want your favorites to win, but some of the best movies ever made didn't take home major Oscars, and time has a way of righting the ship on Oscar injustice. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
You ought to be in pictures. You're wonderful to see. You ought to be in pictures. What a hit you would be. Your voice would thrill a nation. Your face would be adored. You'd make a great sensation. Wealth and fame, your reward. And if you should kiss the way you kiss when we are all alone, you'd make every girl and man a fan, worshiping at your throne. You ought to shine as brightly as Jupiter and Mars. You ought to be in pictures, my star of stars.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at punchdrunkmovies.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Thank you.
if you should kiss the way you kiss when we are all alone. Say you'd make every girl and man a fan, they'd worship at your throne. You ought to shine as brightly as Jupiter and Mars. You ought to be in pictures, my star, oh star.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to our Word on Food. Today's Word on Food is chickens. At a butcher stand in an open-air market nearly 5,000 miles from home, two young girls gossiped and cut up chickens. The snapping sounds of scissors clipping and the hissing near silence of knives slashing played in the light air of Barcelona. I asked them if they'd let me take their picture as they used a vise-like shearing tool to cut the heads off of the birds. The thinner one, closest to the guillotine-like device with streaked blonde hair, didn't understand my choppy Spanish fully and started to pose by holding up a bird by the neck. She didn't smile for the camera. She held the bird outright, with the other locked elbow to her side. I asked her to look at the camera. She faced me, smiled, and tilted her head theatrically. I took a picture, and then I asked her to let me take another of her doing her work with the shears. She understood and posed at the chicken's last blink. She clicked, I clicked, the head dropped. "How many chickens do you cut a day?" I asked. She looked at our dark-haired fellow worker, and they both agreed in joyful English, "Many!" 50, 80, 100, I ventured. She circled her bony arm in large rolling loops as I spoke. "More, more, more!" "Who is faster at cutting?" I asked. They did not understand me again. "¿Quién más rápido?" I tried. The skinny one beamed and raised her arms in a champ's pose. "Me!" she cried out. "I am, I am!" The great cuisines are born in the spice bazaars, meat stalls, and fresh markets of the world. This tableau before me was kind of a reverse nativity scene. Two figures stood on each side of a creature. Then there was an unfolding death. But death begets dinner. The circle of existence continues, and I have to say, these two Spanish girls made me feel better about our reasoned brutality. When you go to the great markets of Europe, South America, or Asia, it is not the sanitized world of the great American supermarket. In our sanitized supermarket creations, death and such are so far from our thoughts. But then, as algebra reminds us, so is life far from our thoughts. The miracle and sacrifices made are not in the arc of our understanding at the quotidian grocery stores. And perhaps that is why we consume more than we should. Maybe the best seasoning for our meat eating would be these honest food stalls. I'm not particularly religious, but the spirit invades me at times when I see nature so unvarnished as I do in the markets like the one our Barcelona girls earn their living in. When I buy meat or fish in this way, it makes me cook in a way that is fully attentive. I killed a turtle once and have never made any dish with more care or served it with such sacramental reverence. Let me present some theater to you. I am imagining a movie scene as might be directed by Tim Burton and starring Robert Mitchum. In it, the tough actor is joining me at an altar somewhere in the eternal mists. Our hands folded in front of us, a smile invading his craggy handsomeness as we bow and accept the holy wine. Mitch intones, "Death, it's what's for dinner." So please, join me in this benediction and then pass the chicken. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Stone Crabs. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Deborah Margold, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Great to have you back with us, Debbie.
Oh, thanks, Ed. I'm thrilled and got a lot to talk about, as I seem to always have. So I'm going to launch right in with your indulgence. Beginning tonight at the Adrian R. Center for the Performing Arts, they are presenting the Marinsky Orchestra. This is one of the oldest musical institutions in Russia, and their maestro, Valery Georgiev, is joined by International Tchaikovsky Competition winner, Denis Matsuev, and he is performing the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto No. 2. It's a great program, and that's tonight over at the Adrian R. Center for the Performing Arts. And while we're at the R. Center tomorrow night, they're presenting an evening with Harry Connick Jr., the Grammy Award and Emmy Award and Tony Award winning singer, songwriter, band leader, brilliant artist. And that's tomorrow night over at the Adrian R. Center. Tonight, an evening with Jasmine Guy and the Avery Sharp Trio is being presented at Books and Books in Coral Gables. That's at 265 Aragon Avenue. And this is being presented in partnership with the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. Jasmine Guy, who some may remember of TV's A Different World,
Yeah. She
has actually put together and is headlining a beautiful remembrance of the Harlem Renaissance. So it's an evening of performance Saturday night at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. But tonight at Books and Books, you can meet Jasmine Guy and do a Q&A and just get some background into the production itself. And then, of course, tomorrow night, go see the show down at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center and just savor all of the glory that is the Harlem Renaissance. All this weekend over at the Miami-Dade County Auditorium at the Onstage Black Box, Teatro Avante is presenting Años Difíciles by Roberto Cosa. This is going to be performed in Spanish with super titles in English, and it's a tough tale about 1990s Buenos Aires. Very poignant and important show to see. And that, of course, is all this weekend over at Miami-Dade County Auditorium. Tomorrow, it's the annual and wonderful Antique Map Fair, the Miami International Map Fair at History Miami right here in downtown. This is a great annual event that showcases antique maps, rare books, panoramas, atlases from all around the world. And anyone who has any fascination at all with history, geography, cartography, or just discovery of any kind shouldn't miss this festival. It really is an incredibly dynamic and fun treat for the whole family, and you just see the coolest stuff. That's this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday, over at History Miami in downtown. On Sunday, Orchestra Miami is celebrating the City of Miami Beach's 100th anniversary with a concert in Collins Park that is a full family fun concert. It's a free pop-style concert. Collins Park, of course, is located adjacent to the Bass Museum on Collins Avenue on Miami Beach. So pack up a picnic and take the whole family over to enjoy this glorious concert by Orchestra Miami. Also on Sunday, in celebration of Black History Month, it's the fourth annual South Dade Gospel Fest at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center, this year featuring gospel recording artist Landria Johnson, and that begins at 5 p.m. on Sunday down in Cutler Bay at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. On Tuesday this coming week, there's a phenomenally exciting opportunity for both the music students of the community and particularly those of the New World School of the Arts and the community in general. The former concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic, Glenn Dichterow, is coming to give a talk and lead a masterclass open to the public on Tuesday evening at the Miami-Dade College Wilson Campus Auditorium here in downtown. And then on Wednesday night, he is going to be joining the New World School of the Arts Symphony Orchestra at the Arsht Center. So it's time to see our great young artists under the tutelage of a brilliant master artist. And on the program that evening, Mr. Dick DeRoe is going to be playing the Barber Violin Concerto. Next Friday through Sunday, Miami City Ballet is presenting its program number 3, and it features Richard Alston's critically acclaimed Carmen, Twyla Tharp's Sweet Fields, and George Balanchine's Allegro Brillante. And, of course, we all love our ballet. They're just so exquisite. So Program 3 is here. Go check that out at the Adrian Arsch Center for the Performing Arts next Friday through Sunday. Next Friday also, Noches Tropicales is presenting Carlos Oliva y Los Sobrinos de Juez. That's over at Tropical Park. And Seraphic Fire is performing next Friday at Miami Shores Presbyterian Church, and they are presenting Haydn's Lord Nelson Mass. Finally, I'll wrap up real fast. Tony Bennett is performing at the Arts Center next Friday, February 13th. And if you need some Valentine's Day options, here are a couple fast ones. There's the Family Fun Day, I Love Miami at History Miami, Moonlight and Music Valentine's Day Concert at the Deering Estate featuring Wendy Peterson and friends, Raul de Blasio in concert at the Miami-Dade County Auditorium. Miami Light Project is presenting Bombillo in a huge music party at the Lightbox in Wynwood. The New World Symphony is presenting its percussion fellows in the percussion consort titled Heartbreakers at the New World Center. The Danish National Symphony Orchestra is performing at the Arsch Center. An improvised Shakespeare company is performing at the South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center. So do something fun with your love of your life and get out and enjoy some cultural experiences.
And where can we find more information, Debbie?
At the Miami-Dade website, which is miamidadearts.org, all one word, miamidadearts.org.
That's Deborah Margold, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs, with some great suggestions. Thanks so much and great weekend.
You too, Ed.
Let me also mention free marketing for nonprofits today and tomorrow at the University of Miami School of Communication. It's their 6th annual Philadthropy. For more information, go to philadthropy.com. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. We want to thank our technical directors today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Judith Bishop, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Deborah Margol. Call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. Fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.